The trading floor is closed. It's time to cut through the chatter and find the clarity. From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk After the Bell. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
There's no reason to watch the
clock. I hope that didn't come through. Wow.
I think it probably did.
Reading about crude oil. That's the talk of the day.
Welcome to HCB, everybody.
I can't be held accountable for my actions, Chip. I'm full of rhubarb pie. I just had a slice like about 20 minutes ago, the last bite of that delicious flaky crust.
He's intoxicated by rhubarb, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm all hopped up on the rhubarb. Oh, it feels so good, too. I know rural America knows what I'm talking about, too. That rhubarb pie. I walked into the diner and I saw the little stack, you know, each piece on it.
Oh, you were over at the Maid Rite, weren't you?
I went to the Maid Rite and I said, hey, is that third one, is that rhubarb pie? She said, yes, it is. I said, box it up, Flo. I'm taking her with my lunch.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome to HGV, everybody. And I'm your host, Chip Flory, and the rhubarb drunk guy. That is Davis Michelson.
Yes, it's fermenting in my belly.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes, Davis, there is lots of news going around the world right now about exactly what happened to that journalist and the impact on crude oil and Saudi relations. And, my gosh, it just keeps getting deeper and thicker and trying to figure out exactly what's going on there. So,
well, and it's an interesting story. I mean, if the Trump administration wants to go up against China with trade tariffs and all this stuff, okay, we get that. If you want to start kicking sand at Saudi Arabia, you know, put those two together, and we've got two major world economies that, you know, I mean, this could be something.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, Saudi has always been thought of as an ally in the region. And, you know, you start tossing that in there and it gets really, really confusing on what it all means. Little change in the dollar, although the dollar did bounce around quite a bit today. Crude was firm. Mm-hmm. It's still holding in there firm. Stocks were more than 500 points higher earlier today, trading sharply higher. Corn lower, soybeans lower, soybean meal lower, bean oil slightly lower, wheat worked to the downside. Live cattle were mixed, feeder cattle were lower, and lean hogs were higher in today's trade. We've got a lot to talk about today with Brian Grady. Brian is the editor of Pro Farmer, and Jeff Wilson. Jeff is the senior market analyst at Pro Farmer. Of course, we want you to be part of the conversation. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. If you tweet at us, make sure that you include hashtag ChipATB in the message. All right, Davis, what was moving the markets?
Well, I think the U.S. dollar index had another volatile day of trade, but was trading nearly unchanged as the grain market was closing down. The spot month index did spike support at 94.50, but recovered to close above that support level. Wheat futures pushed through resistance at yesterday's high, but could not maintain the upside momentum. But chart watchers argue as long as December SRW futures can stay above 520, odds are we'll see another test of this week's high. Pressure on wheat futures today was due to improved harvest conditions in Canada and expectations of big progress in seeding the winter wheat crop in the U.S. Central Plains.
Yeah, and the Russia story is picking up some steam, too. Did USDA go too far to the downside with its Russia wheat crop estimate?
Oh, geez.
It's starting to look that way, but so did a lot of private crop watchers, too.
December hard red futures were 3¾ cents lower at 528. December soft red slipped a penny and a half to close at 523.5. December spring wheat fell 4¼ cents to 596¼. USDA says 39% of the U.S. corn crop was harvested as of October 14. That was up 5 percentage points on the week, with most of the progress seen in the Eastern Belt. The 5-year average harvest pace for October 14 is 35% complete, Chip.
Yeah, so the overall corn harvest is still 4 points ahead of the 5-year average, and most states are ahead of the 5-year average pace. Iowa is the most notably slow, with 17% harvested compared to an average of 24%.
Drier and warmer, but still cooler than normal temperatures over the next 10 days should allow growers to make significant harvest progress. Expectations of increased hedge pressure on corn futures weighed on prices today. After a strong three-day rally in corn futures, traders say a setback on profit-taking was no surprise. Strong support in December futures is expected at 369. December corn futures were 3 cents lower at 375 and a quarter. March corn slipped 3 cents to close at 387 and a quarter. May corn closed to 394 and a quarter. That's down 3 cents today. November bean futures opened a quarter of a penny lower and on the high of the session, then drifted to a low range close on profit taking. Traders are looking for support in November beans at 870. Bean harvest as of yesterday was 38% complete. That's up 6 points from the previous week, but well behind the 5-year average of 53%, Chip. Traders are looking for farmers to make significant progress on bean harvest this week, increasing hedge pressure in bean futures.
Yeah, this is where the slow harvest season in the Western Corn Belt is really showing up. Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas, get this. They are all more than 30 points behind the 5-year average harvest pace. Wisconsin's like 20 points behind, Nebraska's behind, and so is Kansas. A lot of catch-up that needs to be done.
November soybean futures were 6¾ cents lower at 884¾. January beans fell 6½ cents to close at 899¼. March soybeans closed at 911½, down 6½ cents. Some light profit taking in the cattle market today. December live cattle 20 cents lower at 117.77½. February cattle firmed 12½ cents to close at 121.82½. November feeders were a buck lower at 154.22½. Strength in the pork product market is turning into support for lean hog futures. December hogs were 12½ cents higher at 56.87½. And February hogs firmed 35 cents to close at 64.25. Well off session highs, though, Chip.
Yeah, well off session highs. All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's get some perspective on today's price action from Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. Joe, after the way that the market had traded, corn and soybeans in particular, over the past three sessions, a little bit of a setback, no big surprise?
Yeah, I don't think that today's price action was really all that bad considering the rally yesterday. I mean, when you can combine the 2 days, we were able to hold on to the majority of the gains. It's kind of interesting here, the big short covering event in the corn market's essentially over. Funds are probably about flat right now. They're actually net long as of yesterday's close, according to some of these estimates. So now the question is, do these big money managers want to come in and actually add some length in the corn market? Is that something that they're going to do here despite what seems to be a pretty negative fundamental situation, despite the prospect of bigger acreage next year? The money flow thing is kind of an interesting aspect right now, especially with what's going on in the stock market.
I was just going to go there with the way that the stocks came back today. It almost feels like it's risk on, put the money back into the stocks and maybe take some out of the commodities.
It could be that simple. I don't know if it is. The other thing that I've been watching is this Brazilian currency. You know, we started this rally in the row crops back in mid-September, and there appears to be a very strong correlation, at least when you pull up a chart, that you know, this rally in the Brazilian currency has really correlated with this rally in the row crop markets. So I don't know. It's seasonal. I mean, we've had some short-term, you know, friendly news here, but big picture, this China thing, these ending stocks, more corn acres next year, there's still a lot of negatives, big picture.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, I just called up that chart. Yeah, it is a bit of the real has gotten a little choppy in here, but still, it's trading a lot higher than what
it
was.
It bottomed at the same time, though. That mid-September low was, you know, suspect, definitely.
Yeah, no question. Hey, have fun with the show tomorrow, Joe.
Yeah, we'll see you, Chip. Bye.
All right, that's Joe Vaklovic with Standard Grain. He's going to be guest hosting for me tomorrow as Davis and I hit the road. Okay, coming up, we got Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer next, right here on ATB.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com. Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you paying too much for fuel and fertilizer? Verify you're getting the best price with Inputs Monitor from Farm Journal Media. Knowing the low, average, and high price quotes from dealers in your area for fertilizers and farm fuels can save you thousands of dollars. Inputs Monitor gives you an easy, anonymous method to compare fertilizer and fuel prices from across the Midwest. Plus, get grower-focused buying advice, local pricing charts, industry news, and purchase alerts so you don't miss any critical buying opportunities. Visit InputsMonitor.com for subscription information. That's InputsMonitor.com. Unbiased and farmer-focused, Inputs Monitor is the newest and best tool to help growers buy inputs at exactly the right time. Before you book your next fertilizer or fuel contract, verify you're getting a fair price with Inputs Monitor. Learn more at InputsMonitor.com. That's InputsMonitor.com.
Today's trading is over. Now it's time to set your strategy for tomorrow. This is AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
Hey, at Jim Smith 87. Good to see that you tuned in today. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of you for listening. Welcome back to ATB. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Let's see. What are we looking at here today? Corn was lower. Soybeans lower. Soybean meal, bean oil both worked to the downside. Wheat was lower. Live cattle were mixed. Feeder cattle lower, and lean hogs were higher again today. A little change in the dollar index. Crude was firm, and the last time I looked, and I say that with caution because the volatility that we've got in the equity markets right now could make me wrong in a hurry, but the last time I looked, stocks were trading sharply higher and starting to maybe attract some of that money back into the equity side of the market. Brian Grady is the editor of Pro Farmer. Jeff Wilson, senior market analyst at Pro Farmer. They join me now. Brian, how's it going today, bud?
Well, it's sunny here in Cedar Falls, so, you know, it's better than it has been the past couple weeks.
Yeah, no question. No question about that. Jeff Wilson, senior market analyst. How are you, man? How's things up in Milwaukee?
Go Brewers, and it's sunny here, too.
Yeah. Yeah. two to one lead, right? Things feeling pretty good up there?
Yeah, we have a relief pitching staff, and that's all we throw. We've been getting some very timely hits, so it's all good.
Yeah,
we just need to get some timely hits going on in this grain market and break out of some upside targets and get on our way.
Yeah, you know, speaking of timely hits in the grain markets, yesterday was a freaking home run in that bean trade. Corn was busting up through some resistance levels as well. I don't know if you heard Joe Vaclavic or not talking about the fund positioning in here, but the funds, according to some estimates out there, are flat in the corn trade, maybe even thinking about getting a little bit long. Do you think the funds would do that, Jeff?
I think they have a reason to get in there. I don't know whether or not they can do the same sort of positioning like they did earlier this year to go from 200 net short to 200 net long from January to March, but We have taken it down from 141 net short to last week. It was down to like 41,000 net short. And I would agree with Joe that we're probably pretty close to net even. So now you need another catalyst, one more catalyst to get that going. And I think that could be maybe a good export sales report on Friday. I think we're also starting to see more ethanol being exported since the Brazilian ethanol prices jumped a bunch.
Okay. Now, there's one that I hadn't noticed. What's going on there with the Brazilian ethanol? Is it the sugar price or what?
No, they've pretty much had a little bit shorter crop. They put a bunch of sugar into ethanol earlier this year. That made them a little more competitive. They actually exported a little bit to the U.S. and to some other locations. But now, all of a sudden, they've run out of the sugar. They've slowed down the crushing over there. And their price is starting to go up. They use a lot of ethanol over there, too. You know, they don't have a 10% ethanol blend. They have a 20, 25% ethanol blend.
Yeah, I think they're averaging like 27% on the blend rate right now. And, I don't understand why we can't get that technology that they've got in their vehicles down there, Brian, up here into the United States so that we could burn an average of 27%.
Well, that's a really good question there, Chip. Good humor on that one.
Yeah. You know, the E15 issue, guys, I talked with Colin Peterson from Minnesota about it this morning. I talked with Glenn Thompson from Pennsylvania about it. Obviously, they were both supportive of it. Peterson more so than Thompson, I would say, but Thompson's not against it that I could tell in the conversation. But Brian, it's pretty good news. It's not a cure all for the corn market, but it is pretty good news.
It definitely. We'll take any kind of positive news we can get, especially on the demand side of things. I think corn has a really good demand story right now, but you're always looking to build it. So, you know, it's positive news. Short term, probably has limited impact. Longer term, I think if it gives incentive for more stations to add E15 pumps, then that becomes a definite positive, and that's really what it is. It's growth into the future, and anytime you can do that, like I said, it's a positive.
You know, and Brian, it's good news that it comes at this time of the year. Number one, it gives us a chance of having E15 available year-round and in the summer of 2019 if we can get the ball rolling on this. But it's also the news also comes at a time when we are switching over. We may not be there yet, but the market is switching over from a focus on the supply side to the demand side. This is the time of the year where we need to throw some good demand news at corn and soybeans.
Well, on corn, the export's very strong right now. The ethanol grind, I think that we went through a little bumpy period there, but that's now picked up again. And so I think that the demand side of the story for corn is positive. That's going to carry us, I think, in the months ahead here. And until we start to focus more on the, acreage for next year, those types of things, the South American crop, the types of things that can maybe slow down something from a rally perspective. But right now, corn definitely has a better story than soybeans do on the demand side.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that for a while. You've mentioned it several times on the show, Beach, and I agree. I agree completely. But, Jeff, that big run that we saw in the bean market yesterday, that had some demand news behind it, didn't it?
I think it had spooky demand news, even though it's not Halloween yet. Yeah. But here's the thing that got things going and got the funds to cover, because the weekly USDA export inspections report showed two cargoes of beans moving offshore to China, one from the PNW and one from the Gulf. Now, we haven't seen that happen since September, early September, where we had one cargo go over to China. But these are basically what happened today was people realized these were sales that were made previously, probably back in the springtime. And they're probably sold to Sino Grain or COFCO, and they're going to pay the tariff, which will basically be rebated back to them since they're government entities. And it's not like we're going to see a whole lot of new buying. The Chinese are not going to – no private crusher is going to buy U.S. beans until this trade – SPAT has figured out. But it was enough to get us into a more positive technical situation. And, you know, maybe there is some movement going on behind the scenes. We can only hope so. But it just seems like we need to see some of these other nations continue to load up, and just in case we do get a trade deal by the end of November.
Yeah. Yeah, and Jeff, it was the last time that you were on 2 or 3 weeks ago that you mentioned that the PNW was starting to bid for some beans, and it wasn't just a shipment off the West Coast to China. I mean, there wasn't Vietnam a destination on one of those boats out of the PNW.
Two of them, yeah.
Okay,
two boats loaded to Vietnam, which is a very positive sign. I mean, we got to get that market going. I think there's other Asian nations that may start to designate the PNW as a place that they want to load from, because it's much cheaper for them to get it from there. And that would really help to improve the logistics of the entire soybean market if we don't have those beans in North Dakota heading down to St. Louis to get shipped down the river. If they're going out to the West Coast, that's going to help the basis across the country.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely will. And, Brian, there were some beans headed to Argentina in the last inspection report as well.
Yeah, Argentina, you know, I think that we're into the time frame when China would normally be buying, you know, U.S. beans hand over fist. That isn't obviously going to happen this year because of the trade circumstances. Other countries are there to pick up some of the slack, and I think that got us to this point. Now we're going into that period where we would see the exceptional demand, export demand, probably going to lag through there. I just don't see it keeping full pace with everybody else. But domestically, we can't forget about the crush pace. I mean, we had record crush.
Oh, yeah.
You know, NOPA, that helped out yesterday as well. And that's there to pick up slack on the export side of things. Now, you know, is it going to pick up all of it? No. But at the same time, it does give you some hope that we are going to chew through some of those supplies. It isn't just a lost cause here as we go through the what is normally our strongest demand period.
Yeah, Brian, that crush pace that we're working with, my gosh, it seems like, what, 6 months ago, we were already starting to question, well, we got to be bumping up against our crush capacity. Obviously, we hadn't, because we continue to set these record monthly crushes.
Yeah, and I think this is the year, 18-19 is the year that the crush capacity will be fully tested moving forward, assuming that we can continue to move the product. And I think that that's kind of a lost you know, factor in this whole thing, is that soy oil demand is very strong. The primary source there being biodiesel. We continue to see stronger than anticipated demand on the soy oil side. And then the meal with the exports, you know, still a positive story there. You know, domestically, we've seen some of the DDGs back up a little bit and cause a little bit of a blip there, but at the same time, I think it's still a positive story.
All right, good stuff, guys. We're going to talk about the supply side of the market, both the U.S. and from South America next. We're talking with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson, right here on ATB.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
It's time for After the Bells Tech Talk. Pro Farmer senior economist Dan Vaught joins us. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Jeff, I'm looking at March raw sugar futures again today. After posting a double bottom in August and September, sugar futures broke out of their 2018 downtrend in early October. I suggested Mark futures would suffer a short-term setback at that point, but the market seemed to be headed higher. Well, the short-term setback consisted of 2 days of sideways lower trading, followed by a renewed surge to the upside. Thus, the March contract jumped from a September 27th low of 10.8 cents per pound to yesterday's high at 13.55. That's a 25% advance in just 3 weeks. It set back today, thereby marking just the second lower close in that span. And given the fact that its 14-day relative strength index has reached overbought levels, I'm inclined to expect another bout of consolidation before it makes another run to the upside.
Another run to the upside. We got to watch that because of what we were just talking about with Jeff about the ethanol demand. Thanks, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaughn.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Expert analysis from the CME floor and experts across the country. This is AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
And welcome back to ATB, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're talking with Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. Before we get back to the conversation with the guys, let's get a market recap from Davis.
Well, Chip, December hard red winter wheat futures were 3¾ cents lower at 5.28, with front month SRW down a penny and a half to close at 5.23½. December corn was 3 cents lower at 3.75¼. March corn slipped 3 cents to close at 3.87¼. November beans were 6¾ cents lower at 8.84¾. January beans fell 6½ cents to close at 8.99¼. December live cattle, 20 cents lower, 117.77½. November feeders, a buck lower at 154.22½. And D's hogs were 12½ cents higher at 56.87½. That is your quick market recap. Now back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. You can also tweet at us, and if you do, include hashtag ChipATB in the message. That way, we'll be sure to see it. Talking with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Guys, this came in just a couple of minutes ago on Twitter, at LongGoneJohn81. He says, the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. We are all armed to the teeth with new 1250 LSWs and tracks and bigger grain carts. We will be caught up with hashtag Harvest18 by midweek next week in Minnesota and the Dakotas. I tell you what, though, it's going to take 10 days to get caught up because they've fallen way behind up there. Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas. On corn harvest, they're not too bad in Nebraska. They're behind on beans, but you got to slide down into Kansas, Iowa. And when it comes to corn harvest, Brian, really, it's Iowa that is the problem, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I made a trip down to far southeast Iowa yesterday, and you get 40 miles south Iowa City or so, and there's quite a bit of progress that's been made down in there. But everything from that level up north, boy, there's very little activity. At least there was yesterday, and a lot of still water standing in fields still, but you know, probably corn isn't going to be the problem. Soybeans, there just weren't any soybeans cut, and you know, the cool temps, they aren't going to dry down the moisture, standing water. I think that one's going to be the struggle probably moving forward.
Yeah, Jeff, listen to these numbers. This is from October 7th to October 14th. Iowa went from 18% bean harvest to 19%. Kansas went from 14 to 16. Dropped down here to Nebraska, went from 36 to 38. North Dakota went from 34 to 37. South Dakota from 28 to 29. Wisconsin actually wasn't a terrible week, but it wasn't a good week either. Went from 17% to 21%. But all of those states, for the most part, are 30 points behind the five-year average pace on bean harvest here, Jeff. I mean, we're leaving harvest-ready beans out in the field for too long, in my opinion. It puts that 53.1 national average bean yield that USDA estimated in, puts it in question, doesn't it?
I think it's a big question mark, and people are going to be very interested to hear what harvest results actually are over the next 2 weeks. Did you know how many beans popped out of their pods? How many, you know, just shattered? You know, there's talk of the black bean plants and some of the varieties out there. They just, you know, they're a little bit diseased, and all that means is that it becomes somewhat of a quagmire in terms of merchandising those beans. It doesn't necessarily has to be bullish for prices, either futures or cash markets. It's more of a cash market logistical problem. But I will say both the corn and soybean harvest being behind is one reason why here we are with corn and beans, you know, attacking their August highs. And what have we seen the last 3 months from USDA on ending stocks of corn beans? All 3 months they were raised. And here we are where prices are almost about to take out the August highs. So there's something more than just worries about the supplies out here. I think there is some demand underneath the market, and if we can just get one more callus here or there, then we can maybe pop out above these August highs.
What do you think the potential is in these markets here, guys? If the August highs are going to be awfully difficult to get through, aren't they, Brian?
Well, on beans, January beans, we're into the resistance area, $9 to $9.30. I think that's a tough level. It's really got to go to get through there. You know, if it would somehow pop through that 30-cent range, now you're talking the potential to find some chart-based buying. But that is a lot of overhead resistance in a range that we're already into. On corn, I think December contract, 387.5, 388.5, somewhere in that range is legitimate to a level where you can get to, and that would be the, you know, basically the summer highs there. So I think corn has more to the upside than beans do right now. Corn has the potential, I think, to lead us, but we talked about it in the first segment. We're going to need the funds to probably go along that market to get up into that area.
Right. And, of course, there's South American considerations here, guys. Brian, what are you hearing as far as the growing conditions go down there?
Well, Brazil's off to a very quick start. Both corn and soybean planting running ahead of normal, well ahead of normal. So, you know, the sooner you get the soybean crop planted, the sooner it's harvested, the quicker they can get the second or safrinha corn crop planted. So, you know, it looks like it's set up at this point in time for Brazil to make a huge rebound from last year's drought-ravaged crop, especially the second corn crop down there. It looks like a big production year, a big rebound production year for Brazil. Argentina, it's off to about an average start right now. Nothing more than average, but nothing less than average either. So, you know, how's the weather going to develop? El Nino, you know, would actually be favorable for most of Argentina if El Nino develops. A large portion of Brazil would be neutral. The northeast portion would be potentially negative with above normal temps and below normal precip in that area.
Yeah, that's up where they grow about, what, 15% of the crop that gets into that El Nino drought area?
Yeah, about 10 to 15% of the soybean crop up in that northeast. But keep in mind, the way that they got to record yields the past couple of years has been the northeast has actually not pulled down the average there,
that's
the
right.
average yields. And,
that's right.
See, you need some of that to get to those big yields. Now, with that said, plantings are up probably somewhere in the range of 3% to 5% for soybeans, or will be up. And so, you know, you can back off yields a little bit from a national perspective and still get there with the increase in acreage.
Okay, Jeff, this one's for you. It's a question off of Twitter, at Jay Flickema. He says, with DEIS-19 over $4 and 92 to 94 million acres of corn expected in 2019, how far should an operation get priced?
So you can sleep at night is probably the one rule. I will note, I mean, you got to take some risk off the table. Look, a year ago at this time, December 18 was at 405. Yeah. December 19 today, 405. Yeah. Where did we go down to? We went down to 341 in the December contract. And so there's, I think that people have to look at their own balance sheets. They have to see, okay, can I make a profit at 405? I think I can. How much do I want to, you know, leave unpriced? How much do I want to price right now? And, you know, the thing is to shop around. There might be some people looking to, especially if you can harvest early, there might be some people that might want some of your corn if you can get it off in September. So there might be some decent basis bids out there as well if you want to make a cash contract.
Yeah. You know, yeah, Chip, and I'll add that we are into that period now where the corn demand could pull us higher still. I do think that there's more upside in the December 18 contract. And if that strengthens, then there's more strength in the December 19 as well. So we're into, you know, I don't think it's necessarily today that you have to make those 19 crop sales, but we're into that window now where it can kind of work for you. Before we switch our focus to South America, before we switch our focus to what our 2019 acreage will be here in the United States, corn acres are going to go up there. That's, I think, your window. So we're into that now.
Okay. Very cool. We've only got a couple of minutes left here, guys, but I want to jump over to livestock. Beej export demand, both pork and beef, it's helping these markets out.
Well, record strong, and especially on the beef side of things, just been phenomenal. You know, we hear all the talk about the tariffs and stuff like that and the impacts, and sure, there's been some, but the beef export demand has been just off the charts strong. Pork export demand has been a little bit more up and down and stuff like that, but it's still running at a record pace and expected to grow again next year on both beef and pork exports. So we're into a time frame where that demand is helping to chew through those excess supplies that we have out there, the increasing hog numbers, the increasing feedlot numbers. So it's a positive from the demand perspective.
Yeah, and the supply side of the market, Jeff, it continues to kind of put some pressure on the nearby hogs, but those back month contracts are offering up some opportunities.
They're getting up to areas that are getting profitable. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, what's going to happen in China with the African swine fever? And that's such a huge unknown. I don't think anybody can tell you with any certainty how much more they're going to import. But, you know, we've had outbreaks like this in the past. I think it was called Blue Ear, maybe like 10 years ago. And that resulted in the Chinese buying quite a bit of pork after that outbreak. And that isn't quite as serious as this African swine fever is. We just don't have enough information coming out of China. And so I think you got to let your, you know, if we could get, you know, these markets up a little bit more, and especially considering how much the cash markets strengthened here this past month.
Yep. All right, guys. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. We'll talk to you later, Beej, and Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. We're going to pull some highlights here in a second and take a look at the weather forecast on ATB.
Where do you turn to protect your bottom line? It's time you turn to Pro Farmer for easy-to-follow market news and advice for both cash marketers and futures and options users. Visit TryProFarmer.com today for a no-obligation four-week trial to the nation's number one marketing newsletter. That's TryProFarmer.com. ProFarmer is not a brokerage firm, so you're not going to get a lot of in-and-out trading advice or elaborate option strategies. You will get rock-solid fundamental market outlook and recommendations that farmers have relied on for generations. Stop sifting through mountains of confusing analysis. ProFarmer selects only the most important news to save you time and keep you focused on what really matters. Make better informed marketing decisions to protect your bottom line. Try the ProFarmer newsletter absolutely free. Visit TryProFarmer.com. That's TryProFarmer.com.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready 2 Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
Farmers are busy harvesting across the country, and most are using the data they collect to evaluate the outcome of the products and the inputs that were used on each field this year. Channel Seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, is here to tell us about the Channel Field Checkup Series using field data and the Channel Custom Crop Report. Adam, give us an overview of the Channel Field Checkup Series.
The Field Checkup Series is a series of on-farm visits conducted by a seedsman during crucial stages such as seedling, vegetative, reproductive, and maturity stages. Seedsmen utilize Climate Field View to collect the data so they can include very crucial information and share that with the grower.
So you've got all this data coming in from the field. How do the channel seedsmen then turn that around and put it to use for their growers?
Seedsmen are using digital tools such as Climate Field View for the Channel Field Checkup Series to really help us document observations from farmers' fields and to communicate that through digital technology to the grower.
All right, tell me a little bit more about Field View and how the Channel Field Checkup Series works.
First, the farmer needs to share his data through Field View with his channel seedsman. A seedsman will then compile all the data throughout the season and create a custom crop report to send to that grower. That crop report can really be sent at any time. I like to send my custom crop reports after collecting all the data through the season and get that to the guys after the maturity stage of Field Checkup Series.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Adam. Next time we'll hear more about how the Channel Custom Crop Report is used to begin planning for next season's crops. Farmers can learn more about the Channel Field Checkup Series at channel.com, and you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
And welcome back to ATP, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Lorre. Great conversation there with Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. I tell you what, Davis, I cut him a little short when we were talking about livestock, so I want to kind of revisit a couple of those issues that they were talking about.
Okay. Let's have it.
Yeah. Okay. The ASF. Boy, when Jeff brought that up, it triggered a thought in my mind. And when you combine
talking about the African swine fever.
Yes. Yes. African swine fever. And when you combine it with, like Jeff said, we're getting some of those summer month contracts above $80. It doesn't represent huge profits, but there are some profits to be had at that. So maybe you do want to think about laying off some of that risk. But with African swine fever, how aggressive do you get? That's why a lot of people right now, and we've talked to several on the show about it, are saying, listen, if you do put a hedge on in hogs, and in those summer month hog contracts in particular, if you do that, maybe look and buy an out-of-the-money call option. Now, an out-of-the-money call would be a call option with a strike price that is above the current futures price. So that cheapens it up. That cheapens it up. Plus, if the market decides to go to the upside, well, then that call starts to accumulate in value, and it offsets the losses that you might see in the futures in your hedge position. Of course, the cash market is already there to do that. Okay, so as your value of your cash hog rises, it offsets the losses in the futures. That's why it's called a hedge. But in this case, you know, you look at it with that hedge and a call position, that's in reality, it's a minimum price contract on hogs. That's all you're thinking about. So when you're, if you would use a strategy like that, you just take your cost of that call option, take it right off your hedge position, and you know that that's what your minimum price is going to be on those hogs then. And it's a strategy that does it work every time? Absolutely not. There's no strategy that works every time.
I was going to say, does any strategy work every time?
Exactly. But it is a strategy when we are dealing with a situation like African swine fever in China, where we don't know how widespread it is, where we don't know how much demand it might turn into for U.S. pork. This is one of those times that a minimum price strategy might pay off really well.
Here's the thing with this, and maybe you can speak to perhaps the seasonal nature of this disease. Maybe we need to get the good professor involved in this conversation at some other later time. But it seems like it kind of went away for a while. It was a big thing. Everyone's all nervous. They found it in the hog herd. And then, not so much. And they even eased some restrictions in certain parts of certain provinces.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden there's a big resurgence of it. A big 20,000 head operation has found some cases inside of that, you know, big old herd there. And everybody's talking about it again. So when you're talking about that, I mean, do we expect this to kind of come and go a little bit? How do these things go?
It all depends on the flow of information from the Chinese government.
Oh, geez.
And if you can figure out the flow of information from the Chinese government, then we'll get this figured out. Uh-huh. You know, I asked Tyne Morgan this morning on AgriTalk. She was reporting on what you were just talking about there, Davis, that 20,000 head liquidation. And I asked her. I said, do you feel like we've just scratched the surface on how severe the outbreak of ASF might be in China? And, you know, she didn't have a good answer because nobody's got a good answer to that question.
Right.
So, boy, it's something that we clearly have to keep track of, as we need to keep track of the meat exports. I didn't give Brian near enough time to talk about the influence of the beef exports, the pork exports on these markets, but it's providing it. The export markets are kind of acting like a float for both cattle and hogs in here right now. So that's really good news. The harvest progress. Boy, I went through some of the numbers earlier, but when you look, obviously soybeans are really showing us where the harvest delays are most serious. Wisconsin over to the Dakotas, down to Kansas, and swing it back up to northern Illinois. That's that area that has been held back the most by Mother Nature. We need to keep a close watch on it. Hopefully the guys like at Long Gone John 81 said, hopefully guys are going to start to be able to get caught up. And according to the National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook, you've got some time in here. We've still got the below normal temperatures, Wisconsin, most of Iowa, Missouri, eastern Kansas, and points to the east. We're expecting to see below normal temperatures for October 22nd through the 26th. We've got above normal temperatures coming into western Minnesota, the Dakotas, Nebraska, and northwest Kansas, where we're expected to see above normal temps. Below normal precipitation still expected for October 22nd through the 26th through the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, most of Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan are in on that as well. But we do have some above normal precipitation starting to push up from the southwest, even getting into southern Nebraska for that October 22nd to 26th period. Jump out to the 8 to 14 day, October 24 to the 30th. The above normal temperatures are pushing a little bit in from the northwest, but above normal precipitation expected over southern North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, those same areas that are running furthest behind on harvest. Above normal precip coming back in for October 24th through the 30th. So if you can get things done, boys, get her done. Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by easing into it. Transitions can be tough, so rather than making a dramatic shift, try just easing into it. And now today's tweets at Hawkeye Hamer demonstrates. The state of Iowa is waiting on their neighbor to try beans. At Haley Neighbors, I'd really prefer to ease into winter. I'm not ready for this 40-degree weather already. The Lubbock wind is harsh, even worse when it's cold. 40 degrees yes. in Lubbock.
Yes, it is.
And one more at J Lazy S Angus. Started looking for the bull that didn't come home last year, earlier this year. Hashtag it ranch life. He's not in any hurry to go home now either.
No. All right. Thanks. Yeah, no kidding. Thanks for listening today. Thanks, Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson. Tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, Farmer Forum, Ryan from North Dakota, Andrew, Missouri, and Rock from Illinois. Have a great night.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.